What up, what up, what up, everyone? This is Dr. Dennis Tien. This is the Doctor Football Podcast. How's everyone doing today? I'm recording here with the main man, the CEO of Hedgebetter, Justin Fine. Justin, how are you today?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. We're doing another episode of the DFP, the Doctor Football Podcast today. Justin, we are thick into the offseason. Things are heating up. Free agency is behind us. The draft is ahead of us. And the offseason hot stove, if you will, is churning as much as it ever has. A lot to talk about, man, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Or, I mean, in the Patriots' case, a lack to talk about, right? So this is this is going to be interesting, seriously, because I know last time we talked, we were saying, all right, hopefully next time we get into the studio, we were saying, you know, we don't want to panic too much, push the panic button. Free agency had just started. Next time we get in the studio, you know, hopefully there'll be updates. Well, here we are, like, what, 2-3 weeks later, and we do not have too much to discuss.
Yeah, it's true. We're going to get into that because obviously very different offseason this year than last year. And it just really says something about this organization. So we'll get to the Patriots stuff first, just at some point. But first, the first thing I want to talk about, we have to talk about, is Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. And Brady has once again managed to put himself at the forefront of the off-season, off-field storylines in the NFL. Tom Brady, Justin, has changed a ton. He has changed a ton from the player he was when he first came to New England, from the player he was mid-career in New England. And he is really, I think, a radically different persona, radically different person now than he was during that time. And I might even go so far, Justin, to say Brady's become detestable. And I don't know if you saw that Dan Shaughnessy column in the Globe a week ago about Brady. But what I'm talking about is the situation in Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians being fired. And anyone that has half of a brain cell knows that this was all orchestrated by Brady, and that not only did Brady did this by faking a retirement announcement, by yanking millions of fans and the football viewing public, and hundreds of other people who make their livelihood on professional football in who knows how many ways, yanking those people along with this facade, this fiasco that he was going to retire. And we said at the time it didn't make sense. Well, now we know why. Because he had no intention of actually retiring. It was all a window dressing. It was all a game to try and leverage the Tampa Bay Buccaneers into firing Bruce Arians. And you know what, Justin? They did it. And what really strikes me about the situation, frankly, is that the way the Glazers have handled the aged Tom Brady, the different Tom Brady, the diva Tom Brady, the post-Giselle, married to a supermodel, endorsed trendy products, and the chic, neoteric Tom Brady that is so different from the down-to-earth kid that started off here 20 years ago, the way that the Glazers handled that diva is so much different than the way the Crafts handled them. And I think that's what we need to talk about to start. The Glazers took a hard line with Brady when Brady tried to push his way out of town. The Crafts didn't. They relinquished the franchise head. They let tag. They let Brady walk away. Okay. The Glazers made changes to their coaching staff. They got rid of the head coach that Brady wanted gone. The Crafts sided with an aging coach and his system. The Glazers gave Brady a seat at the table. There are rumors that he's going to be involved in crafting the defense. There are rumors that he's going to be involved in personnel decisions. The Crafts would not let anything like that happen here. They put all their eggs in Bill Belichick's basket. Brady has become a diva. But you know what? There's an old saying, and we've said it on this podcast before, might makes right, okay? Brady's retirement fiasco, I think, will go down in history as being powerfully disingenuous. But the bottom line is this. Guys that can throw for 40 touchdowns and play MVP caliber play at quarterback are very hard to come by. Guys that can win Super Bowls at quarterback, very hard to come by. Okay. Did the Tampa Bay Buccaneers make the right approach to this. If they want the player, then you have to make some concessions to keep the player, especially in today's NFL. Okay, whose approach was right, Justin? Was it the Glazers or was it Bob Kraft and the Patriots?
So I think there's layers to that, I think, right? Let's talk about, I mean, who the coaches in both situations. I mean, I think it's a lot easier to, you know, talk about forcing Bruce Arians into retirement than it is Bill Belichick, right? I mean, Bruce Arians kind of, you know, he might be a decent coach, but he does not have nearly the pedigree, you know, the acumen that Bill Belichick does. I think that's very apparent, right? And I think that's one of the reasons why Brady wanted him out there, like out of Tampa and into the front office or retired or wherever he's going. So that's one thing, right? I don't think we're speaking apples and apples when it comes to Belichick and Bruce Arians. But here's what I will say. I will say that there clearly is this new kind of, you know, era of NFL where it, like you alluded to, it's all about the players, right? It's all about making the players happy, pleasing the players, keeping the players safe, getting them paid. I mean, this is, you know, we are seeing the shift very quickly from a league that, you know, it used to be, you know, we talk about stories in the olden days of, you know, the old school coaches, oh, you don't like it here, I just traded you to another team, right, before you can blink. Like, the days of that are gone. So, you know, when you have the greatest of all time, we talk about how we didn't do enough to keep him here. I think Tampa just said they weren't going to make that same mistake. They said, look, he's clearly our best option at quarterback. He's the best of all time. We were contenders both years he was here. We won the Super Bowl his first year. We can make one more run at this thing, at least one more run at this thing. So, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. I think, you know, you had to, if you were the Glazers, you kind of had to do that.
Do you agree, though, and what I find amazing about this whole situation is that this is so dysfunctional, what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are doing. It is so, like, complete opposite of how you're supposed to run a franchise in terms of letting a player have say in personnel, letting an offensive player help coach the defense, firing a coach to meet the demands of a player. This is the mark of a dysfunctional franchise in any sport, at any time, anywhere. But my question to you is, does that really matter? I mean, in the NFL today, all these rules are so tilted towards the passing game. You get a quarterback that is playing at an MVP level. Can you be a completely dysfunctional, ass-backwards, screwed-up operation, and you're still going to be a contender for the Super Bowl because you have a guy that can play quarterback and nothing? It's just so, that's so much more important than anything else. Nothing else matters. You know, will Brady's ability to do what he does just wash away all the dysfunction in this organization and result in a contending team, Justin?
I have to lean towards yes, because what did he do 2 years ago and last year, you know, barring, you know, a single play or two that kept him from advancing. And if they advanced, they very well, you know, could have went on and won the Super Bowl if they'd followed in the Rams' path. But yeah, I mean, if you just look at it, like, I don't think they became dysfunctional overnight. I think when Tom Brady showed up, I think there was already a certain level of dysfunctionality. Like, it is the Tampa Bay Bucks. Like, they were coming off of their Jameis Winston days, kind of like, you know, they had been in the dumps for a while. You know, you bring Bruce Arians in, and clearly, you know, we're seeing not too shortly after Tom Brady's arrival that there are cracks in that system, in that coaching method. So, yeah, I if Brady was able to do it the first year and make them, you know, a successful franchise last year, I think he can do it again with another coach.
Now, Todd Bowles as the replacement for Bruce Arians. Do you remember Todd Bowles as the coach of the New York Jets? Was Todd Bowles a great coach? He was not. My memory of Todd Bowles is that he was a subpar coach. So Arians, he's not Bill Belichick. He's not, you know, Sean Payton, but he's not Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, but he's a good coach that has shown he can win with the right places and these pieces in place. Todd Bowles is not a great coach. He was not a great coach with the Jets. In fact, Belichick ran circles around him when he was in New York. So I just think like this whole organizational setup in Tampa Bay is so screwed up and dysfunctional. I think it's one of the real intriguing storylines because let's face it, Justin, we're not talking about a 33-year-old Tom Brady either. He's 44. At some point, he's not going to be able to do what he used to be able to do. And I don't know when that point comes, but if you don't have anything behind him, you don't have a strong foundation organizationally behind him, how long can you hold it together with a 44-year-old quarterback? The NFC is wide open right now this year. Like, my sense is Tampa Bay is going to be a contender this year because that division is awful. That conference is awful. Mm-hmm. And Brady's probably still going to be pretty damn good. But if he falls off the map, even 10, 20%, honestly, it might not go the way we're all expecting because they have created a powerfully dysfunctional organization.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And, you know, one other thing that I think we should touch on is, you know, when Tom Brady came back to the Bucs, it was because, you know, in the GM, what was his name? Was it Jason Light? Is that the GM of the Bucs?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So he was very outward about saying, you know, we're going to reload. We, you know, it was no coincidence that Brady did this right before free agency started. And I mean, unless I'm missing something, I know the Bucs re-signed a couple players, but they, you know, no one's talking about them. They have really not done much in free agency too. I mean, they went out and signed what, Russell Gage. I'm still not even sure. Is that Edelman thing true? Was Edelman actually going down there for a bit? I mean, if he is,
no, you know, that was an April Fool's joke.
April Fool's joke. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know what, I mean, regardless, you would have gotten in, you know, an old hobbled together player, but yeah, I mean, if you're the Bucs, you know, you added Russell Gage and you re-signed a couple of players. They haven't really done much this offseason too. So, you know, they lost a few pieces. I'm actually very curious. You know, I see both of these, you know, the two greats in the game right now. You see Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers re-signs for a big deal. And then the next week they ship his favorite target off to the West Coast to play in Las Vegas. And then Tom Brady, he comes out of retirement. You know, agrees to come back because the GM says they're going to load up, and then they hit free agency and they've done next to nothing, kind of like the Patriots. So I'm actually really curious because as much as we talk about the front office needing to keep the players happy, it seems like there's a little bit of shadiness going on. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Tampa Bay will be a contender in the NFC by default. That's what I think.
I agree though, but I don't think they've loaded up in the fashion or, you know, in the way that I expected them to once Tom Brady said he's coming back.
They're not. They're a team that I think will be a worse team in 2022 than they were in 21. I don't think there's any question about that, Justin. And I really think, look, I know what Brady's doing is amazing. I know all the rules. I wouldn't be surprised if his game takes a step back it's going to at some point. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is the year. And it just feels like, look, you know, I think Chris Goodwin is hurt. Okay. Right. He's coming off a knee injury. Evans, I think, is on the decline of his career. They don't have a lot at the skill position beyond that. Gronk might not be back. You know, I mean, the head coach, I think, is a net loss for them. I think at the end of the day, Brady doesn't think this. Brady thinks that he can do with Byron Leftwich on the offense and Bowles can run the defense and they'll be better. But I think Arians will probably be a better head coach than what they have. That team is not going to be as good a team as they were in 2021, in 2022 as they were in 21. But I don't think it's going to matter because the NFC is so much worse as a conference. They're going to win 12 or 13 games this year by default. I mean, look at the division. Who in that division is even going to have a prayer of beating Tampa Bay at any point in the season? I mean, really, Carolina? No. Atlanta's going to be one of the worst teams in the league. And look, New Orleans always seems to have their number, but Sean Payton's gone, and that New Orleans team is in rebuild mode. I mean, it's like that's a default six wins right there for the Buccaneers. and across the conference, it's just wide open for them.
No, I 100% agree. Like I totally think like their division sucks. The NFC itself sucks. And that, like you said, by default, they are going to have X number of wins and they're definitely going to win their division. They're going to find themselves in the playoffs, right? My question is whether this team, you know, has enough to take on some of the powerhouses that are forming in the AFC, or even if they could get out of the NFC. I mean, don't forget, you know, the Rams beat them last year. The Rams look like they're trying to keep that success going at least for another year or two. You know, you have Aaron Rodgers and the Packers still there. You've got the 49ers still there. So like, while the overall conference is weak, like there are still some good teams that could battle you in the playoffs. Then not to mention whoever you're going to have to get that survives the gauntlet of the AFC, and whoever comes out of the AFC next year. I mean, come on, it's, you know, I think it's just going to be a given that they got to be the favorites, because that has to be a hell of a team. So yeah, I'm just worried that they don't have the roster to make that final push. Like I think, like you said, they'll get a decent amount of wins, they'll be in the playoffs, but is this a team now that can go all the way and do what they did his first year?
Yeah, I don't think they are. I don't think they are at all. I don't think they're a legitimate Super Bowl team, and I don't think they could. I mean, will match up with the best teams in the AFC at any point. And as you alluded to, you know, there's always going to be that team or two that emerges that's unexpected from somewhere, wherever that is. So, it's a wide open conference, but it's never easy to get to the Super Bowl in any circumstance. My last question for you on this topic, Justin, then we're going to move on. Are you going to be rooting for Tom Brady this year? Obviously rooted for him in New England. You know, I'd love it if he was still in the Patriots. Obviously, that's over. I rooted for him a little bit. I kind of had mixed feelings the first 2 years. After this stunt this year, I just can't root for this guy anymore. In fact, I would even go so far as to say I'm outwardly rooting against him now, because I just feel like I want his career to be over. Like, this is turning into a clown show. This is turning into a dog and pony show with him. All this ridiculous stuff, a fake retirement announcement, 10,000 documentaries, which I profoundly enjoyed, most of them, by the way. But you just add it all up. I just think it's time for this guy to move on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in the camp that as long as he can play, it's good for the game for him to play. It's not only good for the game, it's good for his personal brand. So, you know, in him, his like 75% is still better than 75% of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL, I personally think. So, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to get him out the door and, you know, back into retirement and gone from the game. Cause I do kind of relish, you know, seeing this guy do what he's doing in this age and just wanting to see how far he can take that. But he is making it increasingly harder to be in his team and like be on his side and root for him. Like I totally, totally feel that. Like even the first year when he left like Tampa Bay, I mean, like I was salty, but I was excited to root for him. Right. Like second year, you know, after he won the Super Bowl again, that, you know, it kind of faded a little bit. And now this year, again, like you said, after the fake retirement, all this stuff, knowing he's kind of, you know, had a hand in forcing Bruce Arians out, all this stuff. He just makes it a little bit more difficult with each year.
Do you agree he had 0%, 0% intention of ever actually retiring, right? Can we agree on that at this point?
Yeah, all right. So look, here's a story that, you know, that I had heard, from an inside source. I got a couple stories tonight from that. I don't want to put their names out there, but I will say, their inside source is close to the, you know, the Boston sports media and the Patriots themselves. One of them relates to the Malcolm Butler, 2017 Super Bowl absence. So, you know, we can touch on that at some point, but
We're going to talk about him.
The other story was why Tom Brady actually came out of retirement. And what I had heard is that Brady did actually plan on retiring, and in the sense that that's where he was leaning towards, right? You know, he obviously still was leaving the door open, but he was pretty comfortable with the decision he had made. And then apparently he was super ticked off when the rumors surfaced that he was in behind scenes, you know, closed doors talks to come to the Miami Dolphins, and take part ownership of the team and also play like another year or two down there. And that, you know, it had to do with Brian Flores as well. And the rumor is that apparently that really, you know, pissed him off, for lack of a better term. And he decided that was never the plan. Like, if I was coming back to anywhere, it's going to be Tampa Bay. And he decided to come back to Tampa Bay for a year. Now, just how true is that? I don't know. There obviously could be other factors playing into that as well. You know, that seems more to me like part of the equation as opposed to, you know, the entire reason itself. But I do agree that his heart was never fully in retirement.
Yeah, I don't know about rumors. It just, it looks like he really just, I think, was just leveraging the Bucks right from day one. I think he was leveraging the Bucks. You know, I think he wanted Arians gone. I think he had had enough of working with Bruce Arians, and I think he knew he couldn't blow his way out of town. And when that became apparent to him, he said, "I'm going to retire. And if you want me to come back, then you find a new team, new guy to coach the team, and you let me and Byron do the offense, and you let Todd Bowles do the defense, and get rid of Arians." And I think that's what Tampa Bay did. And hey, good for Tampa Bay, because they were on the fast track to a 6-win season until Brady comes back and he instantly makes them a division winner just by complete and total default. All right, Justin, let's move on. Let's get talking about the Patriots and some of the things that have happened in Foxborough. This has been a disappointing offseason, to say the least, if you're a fan of the Patriots. And I get that you're not going to have a year like 2021 every year. We've been laughing at teams that do things like that for the last 20 years, right, that go all into free agency. So I think we all last year had a little bit of reservation deep down inside. Like, this is great, but isn't free agency for fools? Isn't free agency a fool's errand? But we bought into it because we want the team to do well. And there were holes up and down this roster. And at least they did something to try and fix some of those holes. We've seen a year of the results, kind of a mixed bag. This year is much more typical about what a Patriots offseason is like. But what I find concerning is that, to me, and we're going to talk a lot about this in a few minutes, this is a bottom 10 roster. This is still a bottom 10 roster in the NFL. They got holes up and down the roster. I think they made the playoffs last year because of good on-field coaching and because they have a good young quarterback. And I think that besides that, I really feel like you look at this roster, they got big holes up and down the roster. Last week, the Patriots signed Devontae Parker. Good move. Probably step in the right direction, but let's also put that in perspective. Look at Parker's stats the last 4 years. He's not Randy Moss. This isn't DK Metcalf. This is a guy that might actually be their best wide receiver coming onto the team, but he's not a number one receiver. He's probably a number two, and he has a bad injury history. My question, Justin, for you is, can this offseason still be salvaged? It's almost draft. Patriots are what they are. I think we both agree they're a worse team now than they were 3 months ago. Can this offseason still be salvaged?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes just because I think some of the Patriots' needs, right, which, you know, the two glaring ones to me are wide receiver and cornerback. This is an okay draft for those two positions, right? I mean, this is overall a weaker draft in terms of, you know, quarterbacks, skill players, etc. But there are some good wide receivers and there are some good cornerbacks in the draft. So that I think they still can salvage the offseason with a good draft. I like that they re-signed and brought Trent Brown back. I actually like bringing Malcolm Butler back, not because I think he's a stud, but because I think he'll fit, you know, nicely back into the defense and be able to at least be serviceable. The Ty Montgomery thing, we don't know whether he's going to be used as a receiver, running back, a hybrid of both. Like you said, Devontae Parker, I don't mind having Devontae Parker and Kendrick Bourne and Aguilar. Like, I do think those are, like, decent receivers, but I think you still need a stud to round out that group, right? And right now, I mean, there's no studs left in free agency. You'd have to trade. Anybody that you bring in as a rookie, I mean, you know, they obviously have a certain ceiling as a rookie wide receiver, especially in this Patriots offense, right? That's never really been known other than Randy Moss for producing, you know, a lot of big play guys, you know, big play go-to guys. So I think it's still somewhat salvageable if they were able to pull off a couple trades and have a good draft. But it's definitely a huge disappointment, no matter what happens from here on out.
I think people are being a little too hard on where they are right now. And look, what you just said, you made a great point. They still need top end talent. They need top end talent, but that's not just that wide receiver. That's at multiple positions now. But the problem is, you're not going to get top end talent in free agency unless you pay huge for it, unless you overpay for it. And I'm sorry, I still think those moves end up doing more harm than good. Let me give you a great example. How about who is the guy that the Giants side, the wide receiver from the Lions? His name isn't coming up right now. Kenny Golladay. They paid him huge money last year. He was the top of the market. How'd that work out? It doesn't. The only way that you're going to really generally bring in top end talent is if you take a chance on a mid-level guy and he blossoms in your system, or you draft them. That's it. Because when you go out there and you're paying these huge, huge, huge contracts, a lot of times they end up becoming huge anchors around the weight of your franchise. Now, I think what we're seeing this year, and I do agree that the cap is probably less meaningful now than we have all thought it was in the past. But if you look at some of the moves this team has made, you know, okay, they lost J.C. Jackson, but they brought in Malcolm Butler. You know, at least they got a body in there who's a good guy, knows the system, and can play the position. You know, he was good in 2020, left the game for personal reasons. You got a chance. You got Jonathan Jones. You got Jalen Mills. It's not the worst cornerback room in the league. It lacks a star. Okay, look at their safeties. They got good safeties. They brought in Jabril Peppers. Bringing back Trent Brown stabilizes their offensive line. So they're shoring up the middle of their roster. At the end of the day, they're going to have to hit on draft picks. They're going to have to find star-level talent in the draft like they've done in the past in order to make this roster what it needs to be. There are holes everywhere on this team, and I think in that sense, that's why it's hard to overcommit to one person because they have so many needs. Can this offseason still be salvaged? I don't know. I really don't know. I think that this was a bottom 10 roster in 2020. I think they were better in 21. I think they were still a bottom third of the league roster, and they might be a bottom third of the league roster again this year. You know why? Because when you blow the draft, like they blew the draft for 4 or 5 years in a row, and this was an epic run, the worst run of Bill Belichick's 20 years in the last prior. I mean, you could say 2020 was a success. And you could say 2021 is a success. You're talking 2015, 2016 to 2019 was just a disaster. And it's going to take a couple years to drag yourself up from that. They've made some steps. They need to hit on a few more of these guys to fix this mess. That's the only way you salvage this thing. I don't know if this team can be a contender in 2022. I really don't know. I think there's a couple things that could happen. I think there's no way that this team doesn't go into the 22 season without significant holes up and down their roster.
Yeah, I would actually be, you know, pretty shocked if the Patriots wound up being a playoff team in 2022, especially just when you look at, you know, it's going to be very tough for them to win their division with Buffalo still doing their thing. So you're going to have to slot them into one of three wildcard spots. And just when you go through the four divisions in the AFC and just look up and down, that's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough to find, you know, to find a spot for them there within the top seven. So this is a team that, like you said, I'm expecting them to take a step back in 2022. But to me, that's not a complete failure if two things happen, right? I think if, like you said, we see that the middle of our roster has been shored up, and we see the potential pieces and building blocks for a, you know, a great roster moving forward. In other words, does this team go out in 2022? And, you know, do they battle? Do they compete in close games? Do they steal a few games that they, you know, shouldn't? Do they win the games that they should? And ultimately, you know, just fall short a few times and whatnot. That would tell me that, okay, this is a team that's ready to take the next step. They're ready to shore up the top of their roster. So obviously want to look for that. The other thing is obviously Mac Jones, right? Does Mac Jones take a step back in 2022? Or does Mac Jones continue to grow and, you know, become a better quarterback and do more with the offense? So those two things, I think, you know, are the two biggest, and I think you'd probably agree. And I still, based upon everything that's happened, don't think that, you know, the two of those things can't happen is what I'm saying. I think there's still a very good chance that the Patriots can battle and, you know, be a tough team. And I also think Mac Jones can develop and take a step forward, while the Patriots themselves as an organization maybe take a step back, you know, record-wise and achievement-wise.
Do you agree with me that this is a bottom third of the NFL roster right now? Like, I just don't see many positions where I feel like they don't have several holes.
So I what I will say is that a bottom third potentially. I do think it's a bottom half, right? Because you know, when I look at, we were just talking about the NFC. When I look at the NFC, other, you know, there's what, 16 teams in the NFC. Other than like four or five of them, I think I'd still take the Patriots roster over you know, like 10 or 11 teams in the NFC. And then there's still, you know, a couple teams in the AFC that I'd take them over, you know, teams like the Jets, teams like the Texans, you know, the Jaguars, you know. So there's definitely, I think, room for the Patriots to find themselves as a middle of the pack franchise this year.
Yeah, I mean I can get behind that idea, but they're in the bottom half of the league. For sure. I mean, I put them a little lower than maybe you, sounds like you would, but you know, this team has very few position groups that are settled right now. They go into this draft, I think they got 9 picks. They got 1 pick in each of the first 3 rounds, so they don't have a ton of draft capital, and they've got so many holes. Like, they are so desperate for a linebacker, desperate for a cornerback, desperate for a defensive lineman. They still, the run defense was terrible last year. They need guard, they need a tackle, and they need skill position guys. They are in tremendous amount of needs across the board that it's going to be too much for them to fill in one draft unless they get exceptionally lucky. I just don't see it happening in one season. So I think you said hit the nail on the head. I mean, they have to hope that Mac Jones takes steps this year that elevates his play, because, you know, just the other side of the coin, you know, look, you look across the league and all these teams are going to have holes in their roster, even the ones we think don't will, as the season passes, either through injury or players underperforming. You know, the Patriots won the offseason last year, but they were the winner of the offseason, right? Did it really matter in Buffalo in week 18 in the wild card round that they had won the offseason in March the week before? No, it didn't matter. So what's going to matter is, you know, how these players develop, how they come together as a team, and what happens actually on the field. There are holes on this team for sure, but at the end of the day, it comes down to what happens on the field. And I think the Patriots, you know, I mean, I don't know. We're going to have to go into the season looking for signs of progress, signs of hope, hope that the quarterback develops, and hope for the best. And I think that's really the best you can hope for as a Pats fan. I don't have any expectations that this team is a Super Bowl contender. Do you?
As of now, no, especially given the other teams in the AFC. But, you know, one thing I would say is that you know, like we just said, we need to see Mac get better, right? We want to see if he can take that step in year two, if he can improve his game, continue to grow, even if he doesn't have the best talent around him. And I think that's very important, because, you know, and we've talked about this before, we want New England to be a free agent destination, right? I mean, you know, nobody comes here for the weather. Nobody comes here, you know, for the scenery. You come to New England to play in the playoffs, compete for championships. Like, that's why you come, is to Boston, play Boston sports in general, but especially here in New England, right? So I think Mac, it's, you know, also partly on Mac is part of that rebuilding process at the quarterback position when, you know, you're taking over for Tom Brady to prove that, hey, this is a quarterback in an offense worth coming and joining. You know what I mean? Free agents see that. They take pay cuts. They, you know, they sourced you out instead of you having to source them out. I think that's very important moving forward, is for Mac Jones to set us up as a free agent destination.
Let's talk a little about Mac Jones, Justin, because one of the things, we're going to get into some of the moves the AFC competition has made in a few minutes, but one of the things that I found really interesting this offseason is how quickly people, fans, the media, spectators, the pundits are willing to say, trade Mac Jones. Let's move on from Mac Jones. Let's bring in Deshaun Watson. Let's bring in Russell Wilson. Let's bring in whoever and cut ties with a quarterback who had a really good rookie season. And I just feel like people are losing sight of how fortunate this franchise is to have Mac Jones. You know, historically, 50, 60% of rookie quarterbacks are outright failures. So the fact that this guy can even come in and have a chance to be a decent quarterback is, I think, very, very good thing for this franchise. You know, people hold against him the fact that he didn't throw for 40 touchdowns in his rookie year with a terrible team around him, mediocre offensive line at best, lousy skill position talent, and a coach that didn't want to put the ball in his hands. And it's like people have already decided this guy doesn't have the talent, can't play, is never going to take those next steps, and will never be an elite quarterback. And they're ready to move him out the door to bring in a guy like Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, he hasn't really proven he's an elite quarterback yet. Look at his numbers. Bringing a guy like Russell Wilson, who's a great player and was an elite quarterback, but hasn't done it for a couple of years. I mean, I think it's amazing how fast people are willing to move on or have already decided that Jones can't be that guy 1 year into his career. Justin, why are people even thinking about trading? This is an amazing asset to have a rookie quarterback that has a chance to be a good quarterback, that had a good rookie year. That's tremendously lucky, a great position to be in. Why are people wanting to trade this guy? I don't get it.
Because I don't know. I think from an outside perspective, you know, if you're not a Patriots fan or, you know, you don't truly kind of understand, you know, the state of the NFL and in the game, like you could look at a team that had moderate success, made it to the playoffs, you know, fell short and say, oh, that was a decent team. They had a rookie quarterback. If you put an established veteran on there with proven success, that's a Super Bowl contender. Like that's a common generic misconception that's being applied to the Patriots right now. Because there's plenty of teams that we could take that like from last year and say that they're a quarterback away. Like I think like teams like the Steelers, teams, you know, a couple others that are eluding me right now, that, you know, were one quarterback away from being a potential contender. So I think people are, you know, unintentionally applying that logic to the Patriots, and I think it's incorrect.
Do you think it has something to do with the fact that we just saw Brady for 20 years, and it's like just because Mac, I feel like just because Mac wasn't Brady in his first year, that people are willing to like write his guy off, and it's infuriating to me. I mean, I've been a fan long enough to remember what it was like pre-Drew Bledsoe. We were so lucky to have Drew Bledsoe, who is not as good a quarterback. Was a good quarterback. And, you know, before that, you had Tommy Hodson. You had Hugh Millen. You had Scott Zolak. You had Steve Grogan, who was too old. I mean, there are franchises and teams that go decades between having even good quarterbacks. And here the Patriots seem to have stumbled into a guy who has a chance to be a good quarterback, and people want to trade him and his low cap number out the door for a $30 million, you know, reclamation project. It makes absolutely no sense. Let this kid develop. Give this guy a chance to develop, to go through some kind of development process. No one comes into the NFL and is an MVP caliber quarterback in their first year. That doesn't happen for anyone. It didn't happen for Brady. It didn't happen for Aaron Rodgers. It didn't happen for anyone except maybe Pat Mahomes in his second year. Okay, might be the exception, but it just doesn't happen that way. So people need to get real about what the expectations are for this guy and be patient. Let this guy have a chance. Right now, people aren't even giving this guy a chance, some people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, 100%. I think Mac Jones is, you know, showing that he is the future of the Patriots quarterback, and that he's very, you know, he's off to a promising start. I agree. You know, some people aren't being as patient. Some people are making inaccurate assessments. But you know, my thoughts haven't changed. I'm pretty convinced that, you know, this kid, if he continues to grow and take the next steps and develop like he should, he'll be a great quarterback for the Patriots.
Because I'm not even convinced that he'll be a great quarterback or an elite quarterback. I don't know. I think he has a chance to be one, but it's not a guarantee. But you can't possibly know that after a year, especially, you know, I hear him get compared to guys like Justin Herbert and, you know, Tua. You know, he's always going to be compared to Tua because they both went to Alabama. This guy, Mac Jones, is playing with the worst wide receivers in the NFL. I really believe that last year. There is not one player on the NFL, on the Patriots, that will be a starting receiver on any other team in the NFL. I think that's a fact. The best they had is Kendrick Bourne. He'd be lucky to be a number two. He'd probably be number three on most teams. Okay, this guy went out there. He didn't have Mike Williams. He didn't have Keenan Allen. He doesn't have, Austin Eckler. He doesn't have Jaylen Waddle. He doesn't have any of that. He had nothing. A sporadic offensive line that was a Swiss cheese offensive line at times during the year. Not one running back that can catch the ball. Brandon Bolden is not a third down back. Terrible wide receivers. And he still was viable. So, you know, let's just call out the dogs. Let's see what we can do if we can get this guy some decent skill position talent and see what he can do and give him 2, 3, 4 years before we write him off.
So no disagreement on anything you just said, but I want to go back to Kendrick Bourne real quick because he continues to really intrigue me. He's only 26 years old. Okay. This is a guy that, you know, came into the league in San Francisco. He kind of took a backseat to some of the guys that they had there. San Francisco kind of had a slew of wide receivers over the last few years. But as a backup, you know, he was able to play when guys went down with injury. And when he was called upon, he was very good, and he started to make a name for himself with the 49ers. And then, you know, he comes over to New England, 26 years old for last year, and he shows that he's our most promising receiver on that team by far. Is there a chance that, you know, 26-year-old Kendrick Bourne can blossom over the next couple of years into an elite NFL receiver?
Elite might be strong, but there's a chance he can blossom into a very good. I think it'd be unlikely to say elite, because when you're talking elite, you're talking DK Metcalf, you're talking Tyreek Hill, you're talking, you know, a really upper top echelon.
Fair enough.
But to be a legit number one receiver, Or a top receiver, yes, there is a chance that he could blossom into it. I mean, that's the other thing. When we talk about how the Patriots could develop into a legit team this year beyond what our expectations are going to be, you know, we need a lot of these guys that were here last year to take steps forward. And guys like Jonnu Smith, Kendrick Bourne, Hunter Henry, Nelson Aguilar, guys that have had a year in the system, okay, need to up their game a little bit and take their game to the next level. And I like Kendrick Bourne as a player. I really do. And if you look at the efficiency stats of when Mac Jones threw to Kendrick Bourne,
right,
they were at the top of the league.
Right.
They were at the top of the league. So there is a chance that could become a great combination, but it's not there yet. And there's a reason why they didn't go to it. They only went to it 57 completions last year. And it's because it's not at that level at this time. It's got to grow into it. Right now, as much as I like Kendrick Bourne as a player, I think there are probably a few teams he might start on. He's no one's number one receiver, except for the Patriots. He's a borderline number two receiver on every other team in the league. You know, in Foxborough, he's our best option, or he was. Maybe Devontae Parker is better now because this team is so flawed. They have so many holes. What he becomes this year, we will see. But yes, if Bourne takes a few steps forward with his career, that's going to be huge for what Mac Jones' development. And that's really what they're going to need because they didn't go out and get that true number one guy.
Right, 100%. I'm not ruling out the possibility that if Kendrick Bourne takes another step forward, Devontae Parker stays healthy, you know, Aguilar gets a little bit more acclimated into the offenses, is a deep ball threat, and you have someone like Ty Montgomery who's, you know, versatile. You can do some trickery with him, run him in the slot. I know from a talent standpoint and from a name recognition standpoint, it's clearly the bottom of the league. But I'm not counting out that could actually be a serviceable wide receiver group, at least better maybe than we're anticipating.
I agree with that. And I think you know, I like the Ty Montgomery move. I think that's the kind of guy that can, you talk about bringing in a mid-level guy, putting him in your system and hoping that he takes the next step and flourish. And we've seen that play out. I mean, I'm going to throw a name out there. It sounds crazy. Wes Welker is a great example of that.
Right.
And Ty Montgomery, Cordarrelle Patterson is to a lesser extent a guy like that. Ty Montgomery is a guy that could be that kind of guy. This is an offense that loves the slot wide receiver, that loves your hybrid scat back, that loves to throw to its running backs, that loves to throw to the slot receiver. And that's what Montgomery's good at. So I'm sure that they are going to get this guy the ball. And he, it, you know, he, if he has any chance to take that next step with his career, I mean, I think the Patriots can get more out of him than what they've gotten, than what he's done in other places. So yes, this could be a very viable receiving core if those conditions are met. I still would like them to draft a wide receiver at some point, because they don't have a true number one receiver going into this year. And I think they still need to take chances to get one. Now, maybe Parker becomes that, maybe Bourne becomes that, maybe Ty Montgomery becomes that, who knows. But until that individual declares himself, that has to be one of their priorities. And like we said, if you go into free agency and you try to get that guy that is that true number one guy, I mean, those guys are going for $30 million a year. I mean, that's great. That's steep. Like I thought that was some of these moves that teams made. And we can say the cap is bogus. That's fine. I thought some of it was crazy. I think what Miami did with Tyreek Hill, which we're going to get to, that was going to be the next topic. I think that was crazy. I think that was nuts.
An aging guy,
undersized, aging guys whose game is totally predicated on speed, and you just made that kind of commitment to him and that kind of dedication of resources. I mean, hey, bring it on. I have no doubt Tyreek Hill will have a decent moments at times this year. He might even have a decent year. But I guarantee you, that contract will be a weight around that franchise's neck in 2 years, 3 years. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. I actually hated that move for the Dolphins. Just looking at that roster, I understand Tyreek Hill. But I also thought wide receiver was like the last position that the Dolphins needed, right? It is, right? And we said that with Ja'Marr Chase last year. And, you know, obviously he turned out to be great, you know, was a league leader in a bunch of stats, and it clearly looked like the right decision for the Bengals. But it's a different situation, right? We're talking, like you said, about an aged Tyreek Hill who relies solely on his speed and agility, right? He's not a young guy anymore. He's, I believe, what, 28 years old right now? And like I said, you had a team that had a very good, you know, wide receiver room, especially with a young emerging star in Jaylen Waddle. So I thought it was a super weird move for the Dolphins. I don't really get it. I hope it works out because, it'd be nice to see a high-flying offense down in Miami for a change. I know we got to compete with them, but, you know, I just feel like for so long we've just seen dysfunction down there. And it will tell you, obviously, will tell you what, you know, if you actually have something in Tua or not. And if you don't have Tua, I think they set themselves up to be a nice landing spot for any quarterback that wants to come to South Florida and play with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, right? So in that sense, I do think they set themselves up well, being like, hey, at this point, we got all the pieces that Tua needs. And if Tua ain't the guy, the next guy should have no problem coming here and playing. So I do get that. It almost makes less sense for me, and I don't want to say makes less sense because I understand what the Chiefs are doing, but I just really feel like that's an organization that took a huge step back this offseason. Like, that is, like, they have done nothing to address their defense. They've gotten worse on offense. Their division has gotten significantly better. Every single team in their division, the Chargers, way better. The Raiders added Devontae Adams. They got way better. The Broncos, I mean, Jesus, they got way better. And the Chiefs got worse. So that to me is a little confusing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, just going around the AFC, and I was going to throw out a bunch of team names, but I'm glad you brought up the Chiefs because that was on my list. I mean, I think the Chiefs got worse. I really do. I think not enough is said about that. To me, what the Dolphins did, to take it back to that, Justin, is really, I think, a referendum on Tua Tagovailoa. And the Dolphins have put all their chips out on the table and said, you got no excuses, Tua. You got no excuses. To me, getting Tyreek Hill, drafting Jaylen Waddle, signing Tyrone Armstead, big tackle, they have, I think, indicated that they, deep down inside in that organization, have a lack of confidence, or at least are questioning if Tua Tagovailoa is the man for that franchise. And they are going to make this year a referendum on Tua, if he can do it. And if he can't do it with Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle, Mike Gesicki, they got good running backs. They got a couple other good receivers on that team. You know,
added Chase Edmonds too in the backfield.
Chase Edmonds in the backfield, and a franchise left tackle. They don't forget they signed Teron Armstead, right, the best available tackle. So if they can't do it with an offensive minded coach that's been able to get the best out of a lot of quarterbacks, if Tua can't do it with this group, then I think this gives the Dolphins the answer in his third year that they need. I mean, I think they know that he's not a franchise guy. What this year is about is, can we win? If we put enough around this guy, can we make ourselves into a contending team, even though Tua is not a top 10 and will never be a top 10 quarterback? If we can get him to play at a mediocre level and we got all these great athletes around him to pick him up, is that going to be good enough for Miami to contend in the division, contend in the conference? And frankly, my guess is it's not going to be. The Tua is, I believe, a bottom 10 quarterback. I think Max Jones is a far better quarterback already. I think Tua has shown himself to be a very limited player. I'm not sure what he does really all that well. He has killed the Patriots, I'll give him that. It has been infuriating to watch him play the Patriots. But as a general rule, not really impressed. And I just see this whole thing as really kind of blowing up. I don't think it matters what you surround this guy with. I don't think you'll ever have that dynamic passing game as long as Tua Tagovailoa is your quarterback. And I think that this blows up in Miami's face.
Yeah, I agree. They're 100% putting it all on Tua. And, you know, I think that's exactly what they're going to do. You're 100% right. And like I said, I think if it doesn't work out with Tua, Miami now becomes a very attractive landing spot for the next free agent quarterback or a potential trade target. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
But who is that free agent quarterback? Like who's going to shake free? I mean, this year was kind of a crazy year because you had Wilson, you had Watson, you had Rodgers, Brady was rattling around there. Like, I don't think we've ever seen a year quite like this. Even Matt Ryan, who we're going to talk about next, like, Who's on the landscape? Is it Aaron Rodgers? He signed 2 years. I don't think
so,
he shakes free next year.
I'm
like Miami's going back to the draft.
I'm looking right now. Who quarterbacks that will be free agents in 2023? Right. You got Jimmy Garoppolo. You got
who has a relationship with a coach,
right? You got Jimmy. I'm all, you know, I think we can gloss over Tom Brady because I can't imagine Tom Brady playing another year in Tampa and then going to Miami. I don't think that happens. But let's look at some of these other guys. You got Derek Carr. You got Kyler Murray. You have Baker.
That's a good one.
You have Baker Mayfield, who I still think kind of got the short end of the stick in Cleveland a little bit. I'm looking. Those are three really good options. Lamar Jackson is
Lamar
another
Jackson's
one.
Lamar Jackson's a great one. That's a great one. I didn't think of him. That's a great. You know what one. I mean? Lamar is a great one.
Yeah. So there are some.
And Lamar Jackson has roots in. Doesn't he have roots in Miami?
I believe he's from the Florida area.
Yeah.
So
that's a great one. So that's right. Yeah. So they're positioning themselves maybe for one of those guys if Tua doesn't work out for them in 2022. But you know, it just goes to show, like, you draft a quarterback, you're making such a huge investment. And how many franchises have we seen over the years that take a first round guy and they invest 2, 3, 4 years in that player? You know, you just saw it with Cleveland. You saw it with the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky. The Giants are going through now with Daniel Jones. These guys, if they don't work out, it sets the franchise back. Like, it really sets the franchise back. You know, so many franchises really try to bend over backwards to support these guys. Look at the Giants last year. They bring in Galladay for Daniel Jones. Doesn't work out. Now where are they? They're deeper in. They went all in again this year. But my point being is that it is tough. If you swing and miss at a first-round quarterback, it is such a huge setback to your franchise. So the Dolphins are trying to make it work with this guy. And whether they are able to or not, I think is going to play out over this year. But to me, my personal two cents, looks like a non-starter. We'll see what happens. Let's go on to the Colts, Justin, because Colts made a big move, and I'm not sure I ever remember a team doing what the Colts have done the last 3 years, which is like just like settling for really the same kind of guy in three different iterations, which is that aging guy, maybe on the – I mean, Wentz isn't that old, but, you know, he had a big injury – down from his prime, going from Phillip Rivers to Wentz, now to Matt Ryan, who's going to be a 1 to 2 year solution. The Colts seem to be rejecting the concept of drafting a quarterback and developing him. And instead of just kind of going from, you know, aging guy to aging guy, what is your take on Matt Ryan in Indianapolis? Like, I actually, you know, I don't know if this makes them a Super Bowl contender, but that's a really good team now with a good quarterback. Got it still. I know you might think Matt Ryan is trash, but I think that Indianapolis team will get the best out of him. Great offensive line, great running back, good defense, good receivers. Doesn't have to do as much as he did in Atlanta.
Yeah, no, 100%. I actually really like the Matt Ryan to Indianapolis move. I think it's good for both parties. Like you said, I think it's good for Matt Ryan at this point in his career. He gets to play behind one of the best offensive lines in football. He can rely on his, you know, versatile, dominant running game. He's got, you know, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines. He's got a good slew of young, talented receivers out there. So, I think it's great for Matt Ryan, and I think it's good for the Colts because what did we see with the Colts, right? You brought in Phillip Rivers, and he was, you know, he was okay, but you could tell he was far enough over the hump in his career where, you know, he couldn't do too much for them. And then you said, oh, well, if they were able to get, like, you know, a younger quarterback who was more competent, you know, that'd be good for them. And they went out and they got a younger quarterback. But like I've referred to him before, he's a talented loser. Like, I think Carson Wentz is just such, like, a bum. Like, he really is.
He's just a weenie. He's a total
weenie.
He is.
He's like, he's such a weenie. Like, he gets injured. He makes big mistakes in big moments. Like, he's not a guy that I
mean, you look at his statistics last year. Like, those are good statistics. And I think it's stunning that a quarterback can throw a 3.5-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. And at the end of that year, have the team that he played for push him out the door and couldn't get rid of him quickly enough because they were just so not into him because of what they saw. And I think that, to your point of him being this just like this total, I don't know, weenie, always coming up small when it counts, you know, really can't win with the Carson Wentz at quarterback. And he showed that again last year, and they pushed him out the door so fast to bring in a guy that's like 79 years older than him, right? Because they felt that was their better option.
I mean, look, the biggest games the Colts had last year, I mean, I know they came out and beat the Patriots in that big game, but I mean, look, for them, arguably four of their biggest games last year, both the Titans games against, you know, who the top dog in their division, who they lost both times. And if you remember those games, both of them squarely fell on Carson Wentz's shoulders.
He threw one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen.
Of
his own end zone.
Like brutal.
A couple of them, actually.
Brutal,
yeah.
Right? So he blew both of those games. He was a big reason why the Baltimore Ravens came back in that, like, you know, early on matchup against the Colts. That was, you know, prime time, I believe it was a Monday night game. Big matchup. And the Colts blew a big lead to the Ravens, and they wound up losing. And then last game of the year against the Jaguars, playoff balance in the line, win and get in, and they just looked. And I know that's a team thing as well, but it starts with the quarterback. And it's not like the quarterback played well and the rest of the team sucked. Like, that was just awful. You know
what
I mean?
Is Matt Ryan an upgrade? Are the Colts a better team now than they were – in January of 2022.
Yes, I truly believe they are 100% with Matt Ryan.
They are a better team.
They are.
And you see them, I see them as a 10, 11, 12 win team with that roster. And Matt Ryan, look, we talked about it last year. No question he's on the decline, but that Atlanta team is complete and total
garbage.
Trash. Roster is trash. They got nothing on that roster besides Matt Ryan and Kyle Pitts. The best receiver was out last year. He goes to a place where you're going to get the best out of him because he doesn't have to do it all anymore. He can't do it all anymore, and he's not going to have to. That team will win 10 to 12 games this year. I mean, and I think just to bring it back to Patriots perspective, I mean, Frank, that team's better than the Patriots right now.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree top to bottom. That's a better team than the Patriots. So, we'll see. Matt Ryan's got to get the monkey off his back. Like, you know, he spent all that time, you know, having successful regular season careers, and then, you know, it all built up to that Super Bowl. And then after that epic collapse, like, now he has the monkey on his back. Like, well, can he win a Super Bowl? Like, can he win and close out a big game? So we'll see. We'll definitely see. I think that Colts team.
I mean, they're not a Super Bowl contender, I don't think, with Matt Ryan and the stacked AFC. But that's a playoff team for sure.
Right, I agree. So and that's kind of what I'm saying is, like, I like the move for the Colts and Matt Ryan in the sense that, like, it's an upgrade for both parties, and I think it's a good fit. It's just I don't know if you win a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. I don't. And that's partly what I'm saying. Like, people like me, and I don't, you know, I'm no expert, but people like me are sitting here going, well, after what happened with Matt Ryan against the Patriots, is this a guy who can come in and win a big game, show up in a big moment, win a Super Bowl? So, I mean, I'm sure if I'm thinking it, I'm sure there's, you know, other people out there thinking it as well. So that is my big question with them.
Let's move on, Justin, because we're running a little short on time. There's a couple other teams I want to talk about before we wrap up, okay? We got to talk about the Cleveland Browns and the move for Deshaun Watson. I don't know what your take. We haven't talked about this yet, about what you think of this Deshaun Watson move. And, you know, I don't hate the move for the Browns. The Browns haven't really had a true franchise quarterback ever, unless you want to count Baker Mayfield, which I think I wouldn't at this point, though he may have been their best quarterback in a long time. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. Watson is near that level. But I think, as much as I understand why they did it, and I think it's a good move for them, and I get it, I also think we have to dispel the notion that Deshaun Watson is in the category of Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Pat Mahomes. He is not at that tip-top level yet. And that's just a statistical fact. Okay, look at the production. Look at the record of the Houston Texans. I think they were like 28 and 26 in the 4 years he started. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback, obviously. He's a very good quarterback. But what I'm going to say is that the Browns paid a price for him, both in draft capital and in terms of what they've invested in the player financially, as if he was Aaron Rodgers, or as if he was Tom Brady in his prime, as if he was Peyton Manning in his prime. They're paying him as if he's that caliber of player. They put up the price to get him as if he's that caliber of player. And I'm not sure that Deshaun Watson is quite there yet. I like the player. I've always liked the player on the field. And I want to be clear about that. But I still think on the field, Deshaun Watson has steps to take before he's in that upper echelon. Do you agree or disagree with that take?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, what has he actually accomplished for, you know what I mean? Like, I get it. He has potential. He has serious potential. He's clearly a very talented kid. But I just, you know, what does he have to hang his head on and say, hey, this is why I'm worth this much. This is why, you know, I should be that impactful. I've done X, Y, Z. He hasn't. So I guess if you're investing in potential, you made a good move, but you're not investing in a proven, you know, top three Super Bowl contending quarterback.
They paid for him like he was a top three.
100%.
And people are just assuming that this is going to work. And look, it might work. Like, I don't know. But this guy has to take steps. Like, I don't think has he started a playoff game in his career? Or maybe he started one. He was 0-1, you know, in his playoff starts. Maybe there was one game, 1 year they made the playoffs with him as a starter. You know, he was 4-12 his last year as a starter. He throws a nice ball. He's a terrific athlete. That doesn't mean he's a great quarterback or an elite quarterback. I think right now, like, I'm not 1,000% sold on the Cleveland Browns. As much as I like Deshaun Watson as a player, I still feel like he has progress to make before I'm calling the Browns one of those teams and him one of those guys.
Well, yeah, right. Look, I agree 100%. But I guess to flip it to the Browns for a second, you know, I just think the way professional sports works, right? There seems to be like this kind of like balance where, hey, you can see, you know, good teams getting better over the course of a few years, right? Teams that build the right way. Like the Browns, you know, for the last 5-6 years, they've been getting better, right? You can arguably say they get better almost every year as a team, right? It seems like they finally found a good head coach in Stefanski. It seems like, you know, they have some great talent on that roster on both sides of the ball. They continue to get better each year. You know, they have playoff aspirations now. But how long can a team keep incrementally improving before, you know, the pendulum swings back in that other direction? And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, when you're a team that's on the rise, I think you have a limited window of how long you can keep improving and keep peaking before you need to take that next step and do something with it. Eventually, that's going to swing back in the other direction. So if you're the Browns, you know, you've been getting better for the last 5-6 years, and you've been making a ton of moves to make yourselves a relevant NFL organization. And I know I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth because I don't think Baker got a fair shake with, you know, his injuries and all that stuff. But if you're the Browns, you got to say, hey, we're kind of at the point where we either need to be serious Super Bowl contenders or, you know, really evaluate what's going on here, because they, you know, you can't be mediocre for so long until that starts to swing back in the other way.
Oh, we had a pretty, I think, good conversation back in November about what the Browns should do with Baker Mayfield at the time, if you remember. And you know, it is kind of interesting that they really made an aggressive move to get another quarterback, because, you know, let's face it, nobody was saying the Brown, you know, early last season or even after this season, frankly, I don't think anyone was thinking the Browns were a team that was desperate for a quarterback. I think there were people questioning Mayfield by the midpoint of the season, but I think it was, nobody was thinking that this was a kind of situation where you need to trade that kind of draft capital and that kind of resources in the salary cap to get rid of Baker Mayfield, because you're just that sure that he's not the guy. And I think that is really interesting and frankly, an indictment on Mayfield. Because, Justin, if he was the kind of quarterback you could win a Super Bowl with, the Browns would not have done this. The Browns, you know, I understand what teams like Carolina, New Orleans, Atlanta are in on Deshaun Watson. I still think it's surprising to me that the Browns were in, you know, on Watson and made the play that they did for him. But it says something about Mayfield.
Yeah, and I'm going to be very curious to see where Mayfield goes next and what he does. Yeah, if there's anybody who's got a fire lit under him and an incentive to come out and prove everybody wrong, it's Baker Mayfield. So
is Mayfield the starter, Justin? Is Baker Mayfield the starting quarterback in the NFL right now?
I'm going to say yeah, just because I look at some of the other starters that some of these teams have. I'd take Baker Mayfield over some of
them. Where does he fit? Where's a realistic landing spot for him? I can throw one out there.
A realistic landing spot? Well, if I'm being completely honest, I think the best spot for him is to go to Pittsburgh. I think he should go to Pittsburgh. Get to play
Pittsburgh would be a good one.
Get to play Cleveland twice a year, and then Pittsburgh. You know, we were talking about them as being one of those teams that's a quarterback away from yep. being a potential.
They have good
contender.
Receivers,
right?
They have a good coach. They have some good players on defense.
Right.
That's a good one. I mean, I think Seattle would be a good fit. You know.
Yeah.
I mean Seattle. You got DK Metcalf. You got a couple other decent receivers, and they don't have a quarterback. I mean, Drew Lock is not a starting NFL quarterback. That I think we clearly know right now. He doesn't have it. He is not ever going to be that guy, and he's probably a backup at best. So you know, you got someone like Mayfield floating around. I mean, that's a good matchup. I think you know one of the things that's interesting about this year, and you're definitely seeing this, I think, play out a little. There's really not great, you know, optimism about the quarterbacks that are in the draft this year. I mean, it looks
exactly.
like there might be one or two that might go in the first round, but that's almost more like a default situation where, you know, some teams are so desperate for a quarterback, they're going to take a quarterback in the first round. What you know, it doesn't feel like there's a quarterback that deserves to be there by merit this year. And I think that's really interesting. So a guy like Mayfield should have value to a franchise that and there are a few of them that just don't have anyone. Yep. Justin, before we wrap up, let's just fire through a quick hit take on some of the Patriots moves this offseason. We kind of hinted around some of these, but I want to see your thoughts on a few of these quick hits. Malcolm Butler, what'd you think? Like it or hate it?
I like it. I don't love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a good move. I really do. Like, you know, you're taking a chance on a guy, but you're paying him the right price, and it's you're desperate. And if he can come in and be 75% of what J.C. Jackson was for 25% of the cost, I mean, that's not such a bad place for them to be. I mean, as much as I want to piss and moan because I was so upset about what happened with J.C. Jackson.
Right.
I kind of get it, to be honest with you. And if it works out and this guy can even be like a top 25 cornerback, I really don't think they lose that much. You know, as much as Jackson was a good player and made big plays, I did watch him get tooled on by Stephon Diggs like three times last year. So, you know, and he certainly had his moments where he wasn't that good. So, you know, I think it's a good move. How about Jabril Peppers? What'd you think of that one?
I really like it because I like Jabril Peppers, but it's interesting because now that secondary in New England, I know we're still a little shaky at the cornerback position, but they got a good safety room in there, right? I mean, you bring back a veteran McCourty who, you know, I don't expect too much out of him, but I expect him to at least be decent and be a veteran presence out there. Adrian Phillips looked really good. Kyle Duggar showed a lot of promise. And now you bring in Jabril Peppers, who was very highly drafted. I believe he was like the number 5 pick or something out of Michigan. He was drafted very highly.
Yes.
I really like him as both. A
I think
special
that was
teams.
A great.
Yeah.
That was a great move. I mean, that really was. And like waiting for the dust to settle on free agency, bringing in a guy like Peppers, coming off a knee injury, you're not desperate for him to come in week one and be your starting safety. He's gonna add depth if he makes the kind of recovery that a lot of guys do with the way they recover from ACL injuries.
Right.
This guy's gonna be a valuable piece coming down the stretch in October, November, December, when a guy like Devin McCourty might be getting tired, when a guy like Adrian Phillips and Kyle Duggar might be injured. You know, this guy's gonna be a factor. Right. They got tremendous depth at safety. I think it's a great answer to the fact that you don't have a star cornerback anymore. You can play zone. You got great depth in the secondary now. How about Shaq Mason move, Justin? Thoughts on trading him for a fifth round pick, getting him out of New England?
I think that one sounds worse on the surface than it actually is. I don't like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like I don't like losing Shaq Mason, especially where our offense, you know, was a little shaky. Our offensive line was a little shaky last year, especially to start the year. But I don't think it's potentially as devastating. I don't think it's super devastating losing Mason and Karras. I think it's a hit, but I think it's more of a surface level hit than it is, you know, a core thing for this team.
It's not the Shaq Mason of 3 or 4 years ago. That's right. The thing. And I didn't mind the move because I felt like Mason was not the same player in 2021 as he was in previous years. I think that was part of the issue with their offensive line throughout the year. They didn't get great play from their interior line. A lot of these guys that had good seasons in 19 and even 20 weren't as good in 21. And I get it with Shaq Mason. I really do. Now, I'm disappointed that they only got a fifth round pick for him. You know, I'm disappointed that they didn't go out and make another move to kind of do something with the cap room that I would have hoped they would have freed up by that. But I honestly think if you look at the structure of this roster, they got Ferentz back on the team. I don't think it's a huge loss. They got Owen Yui. Isaiah Wynn can play some guard. Obviously, they have a terrific center. Bringing back Trent Brown was a huge move, and I hope he can stay healthy because that is the key to this team. Because right now, worst case scenario, you're putting Isaiah Wynn at tackle, Trent Brown at the other tackle, Owen Yui, Ferentz, and Andrews. That's not a terrible starting five offensive linemen. Some of those tackles that were terrible in the first 6 weeks last year when Brown was out actually got a little better as the year went on. Kahusti and some of the other guys that they were rotating in and out of there. They're going to draft a lineman or two. You know that for sure. I think it's okay. I really do. I think they're going to be okay without Shaq Mason. I don't see that as a big loss.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick, would you be upset if in the first round they used that first round pick? I believe it's either 21 or 22. But there are some good players that are projected to be available at that point in the draft, like some good skill players, like a wide receiver like Jameson Williams from Alabama is one that comes to mind. He's, you know, a lot of mock drafts have him potentially falling to us. If Bill came out and pulled such a Bill move and just drafted some big white boy from Iowa or something like that,
that's the guy. You know what I mean? You realize that they interviewed a tackle, a huge house tackle from Iowa today.
I literally just said that like ironically.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah, no, that's exactly but, what happened. That's
yeah.
Funny.
Okay. So there you go. So like, would you be disappointed
if
they did that?
No, I want them to draft offense. I mean, they have so many holes on this roster. There's like five places I'd like to use that first round pick. They only get one pick. I wouldn't mind if they drafted an offensive tackle. I think that would be a great thing for Mac Jones' development. You know, the guy I want them to take, and this was going to be the next topic, and then we're going to end it up, so I'm glad you brought it up. I'd love them to take this guy, Michi, from Alabama, the guy who blew his ACL in October, and then Mac Jones had a real connection. He's like a Deebo Samuel type in the slot. Yeah. Okay, an Edelman, Deebo Samuel type player would be a great fit for what this team needs. That's what I would love for them to do, but I won't be upset if they take an offensive lineman. And to be perfectly honest with you, Justin, they got to hit this pick, and they got to hit this pick with someone that they can't have a Jawan Williams here. They can't have a N'Keal Harry. Whatever they do, they have to be successful. They have absolutely run out of leeway in the draft. You know, they came off a good draft in 20. I think, you know, they pulled a few players out of that draft very quietly. 21, obviously, we've talked about that a lot. That was a good draft. They got a hit this year. And in my book, they draft this tackle. The second best tackle in the draft falls to 21. And they pull him, and he's protecting Mac Jones' blind side for the next 10 years, like Matt Light did with Tom Brady. I got absolutely no problem with that.
All right.
But there's so much skill position talent. You know, you can take a chance on some of these little guys. I'd love to see some of these speed, flashy, burner little guys that are a little undersized falling into the second, third, and fourth round. I'd love to see them take a shot on a couple of those guys, too.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, any final thoughts? That's all the time we have. I'm going to wrap it up. We all got to move on. And we're going to see what happens with the rest of the offseason. We'll record another episode, I think, leading up to the draft. If anything else big happens, we'll take it from there, man. But do you have any final thoughts?
No, yeah. Just, you know, I hope the Patriots are able to make up for what they haven't done so far. We really, like you said, really need a big draft out of them. Going to be super important. Maybe they pull off a couple of late offseason moves as well. So we'll stay tuned.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, thanks to everyone that listened. Appreciate you. This is the Dr. Football Podcast, and we will be back in a few weeks again. Enjoy April and the offseason, everyone. Take care. Be good.